Good evening and welcome to Health Matters. That was the Stray Cats, and the song was The Love Cats. And this is Dr. Sanford Katz, and I'll be your host this evening for a special edition of Health Matters, Pet Health Edition. According to the NIH, interacting with animals has been shown to decrease levels of cortisol, lower blood pressure, reduce loneliness, increase feelings of social support, and boost mood. So having a pet may contribute to your own health. You'll want to keep your pet happy and healthy too, so it's a mutually beneficial relationship. Now this evening, we'll cover some of the important tips on routine pet health care and caring for pets in the summertime in particular. I'm happy this evening to be joined by Dr. April Mackey, a veterinarian with Town South Animal Hospital here in Shreveport, and I believe this is the third time we've had you on.
Yeah, lucky number three tonight.
You're one would say, maybe our resident veterinarian almost,
I guess so. I'll take that.
Yeah, so this is always one of my favorite shows to do.
Good.
We always get a lot of calls, which is a sign that people are listening. So I encourage people to call in with their questions and comments this evening, and the number is 1-800-552-8502, and Dr. Mackey will be taking your calls. And you know, I want to get started with an aspect of I guess pet health that we haven't covered before very much on previous shows. As people know, we have Health Matters, and we also have Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. So I'd like to actually talk a little bit about the mental health of pets.
Okay, I think that's under-talked about, to be honest.
Now, I think are we just going to restrict this to dogs and cats, or is there mental health concerns with the snakes and birds and fish?
You know, I think if they have mental health issues, I don't know as much about them because I'm not the exotic doctor. I'm dog and cat lady pretty strictly. So we do see some exotic pets at Town South. Dr. Hunter sees our exotic pets. And they have, I would say, mental health issues that manifest as then other health issues. If they're unhappy because of their lack of nutrition or lack of husbandry, which are the huge issues with exotics, then if they're unhappy, then they get sick. So I guess that is an aspect of mental health. But true anxiety and things like that that we see in dogs and cats, I don't think we necessarily see that.
Now, what about in like rabbits?
Again, I think rabbits can get really highly stressed because just rabbits in general in the wild, in captivity, they are highly stressed animals. And so because of their ability to get super stressed, they will hurt themselves, break their backs. I mean, kind of crazy stuff just out of being so stressed about just life in general. And so I guess that's what I'd consider that a mental health issue, just because they're just
by nature,
they're not so stressed.
It's not an aspect of the hypersexuality, is it?
I don't think so.
No.
You know, our captive rabbits aren't all that hypersexual. They're a lot. Most of them hopefully are spayed and neutered, so they don't have that problem.
Okay. So we'll limit our discussion to dogs and cats, and I guess we can get started with dogs. So I have to share a personal experience.
You're allowed.
But by all means, you know, if you want to call in a question, I'm happy to take a back seat and we can continue my problems later.
Sure.
So recently I came back from an extended vacation. It was about, 10, 12 days. But we boarded our dog, who's I think roughly maybe 10 years old. Boarded the dog at nice place with lots of social interaction with other dogs and whatnot. And we've boarded her there before, usually not for close to 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But when we brought her back, she was very hyper, and was kind of like didn't want to leave our side. And then like you'd go and get behind a door, go to the bathroom, close the door. She'd be barking on the other side of the door. We don't have the dog sleep with us, but when we'd go to sleep, the dog would just whimper and cry and bark until we came out, and then we would just try to calm her, but then we'd go back to bed, bark and whine. No one could get any sleep for days. We'd put her in her kennel. Nothing seemed to work. We were all exhausted. And then it seemed after a while we'd go out to comfort her, and it was almost like we were wondering whether we were reinforcing this behavior, and then she was training us rather than training her. So I mean, do you encounter things like this before, particularly in dogs that have been kenneled, not kenneled, but stayed in a...
Being boarded
for a while?
Yeah, you know, I think just generalized anxiety in dogs is something that is underdiagnosed. And I think the older the pet gets, the absolutely more likely it is. And so the fact that as a 10-year-old dog, that's... a senior, almost a geriatric. We consider dogs geriatrics at 12. And so the fact that she may have been more stressed this time coming home and having those anxious moments coming home, it may be associated with age. But we definitely see side effects of stress while boarding. We see stress diarrhea or stress colitis from dogs that are boarding. And I tell owners all the time, it's not necessarily stress in a bad way. My own dogs that board all the time, I mean, they know that clinic. They've been going there for 9 years now. They get stressed while boarding. My one Minpin, who's just a stress case in general, he's hoarse from barking at all the other dogs when he comes home. But a lot of that is not necessarily such a negative aspect. They're super excited because there's other dogs around, right? But what you described, definitely, I think, your poor dog was concerned. Was this her new forever home?
Were we never coming back?
Exactly.
That's what it seemed like. And then when we, you know, she didn't want to let us out of her sight, like, you know, for fear that we were going to leave again.
Right.
And maybe she wouldn't see us again.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely something that can be seen. And then, you know, the pets lose weight sometimes when they're boarded. And it's, again, they're anxious, so they burn more calories. And they don't eat like normal sometimes. Now, we have some dogs, our clinic is their second home, and they literally run in the door. So it's not always, you know, a negative experience. But I do think dogs that tend to be more anxious, and again, anything over 7 is a senior, and I think those dogs are more affected by just change in environment in general. Yeah.
So when you're selecting a place to board your dog, what sort of things should you look for?
So I think it depends on the type of dog that you got and also how long they're staying. This is a very personal opinion, but I would prefer a facility that has an on-site veterinarian. Now, of course, that's because, guess what? I'm the veterinarian. But because something goes wrong while your pet is there medically, there's always a doctor on call. I might not be there at midnight, but there's always a doctor on call if there is a medical problem. And honestly, not a day goes by that the kennel staff doesn't ask me or my associate, hey, this dog is doing this. Is that okay? I had a dog today that they found blood in his water bowl. So we looked to see he had bitten his tongue, you know, and he's a big excited lab and he just did it because he was excited. It wasn't necessarily anything bad. But I think looking for a facility that has staff to walk them very often. Also, what a lot of people really like are the option to have luxury and deluxe boarding, and that's, at least that's what we call it, where they have a specific area. It's more of a hotel such as sitting. You know, there's a TV there, there's a fan there, there's webcams. And a lot of people really like that because they can check in on their pet and say, hey, my dog seems anxious. I looked at it was barking at 4 o'clock and now it's 5 o'clock and he's barking again. So the option of being able to watch your dog on camera and call and say, hey, I noticed something because I own this dog and it seems, can somebody check it out?
If you have a speaker, can you talk to your dog?
And we don't have that option, but you know, I think people would love that. But the webcams people love, and we have a limited space for our deluxe and luxury boarding, and then our, you know, generalized boarding is a lot bigger. And I wish we had space for deluxe and luxury because it is less stressful, I think, for the dogs to have those types. It's a run that has a glass or a plexiglass door, right? And so it's not like a kennel, and so they can see a little bit more, and it's a little bit more room. And our dogs that are more stressed tend to really do better there. We even have some of our boarders that come a lot. They board in our treatment area, which is part of our hospital. It's separate from our boarding facility, but they just get kind of special treatment because it's quieter there, and it is very obvious they get less stressed in those situations, because these big boarding facilities in the summertime, they're busy.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of dogs, and they're barking and talking to each other, and again, not necessarily in a bad way, they're communicating to each other.
Are there certifications that people should look for?
You know, again, for me, I think it should be a veterinary clinic, and that, again, that's a very personal opinion, just because I know from a doctor's perspective it makes it easier, you know, on those dogs if there's a doctor available. And I don't know, in, just for kenneling and boarding facilities, are there real certifications? I mean, we're an AHA accredited hospital, but that doesn't really have anything to do with our boarding facility. And I would say just a facility that's been around for a long time. There's, you know, these days there's a lot kind of these boarding, luxury deluxe boarding places that pop up, and they do a great job, but you need to make sure these places have been around and know what they're doing, you know.
What do you do with your cat?
So we specifically at Town South, we have a cat boarding facility that is completely separate from the dog boarding area. And honestly, if I'm having a bad day, you're going to find me in the cat ward because it's quiet. The cats have their own condos, basically. We have a TV that plays birds chirping and you know, birds on the TV. So it's very relaxing. And they actually have an area that they can get out of their condos daily if the owners choose to play with toys, and there's a, you know, a little cat area in there that they can climb on and things like that, and do a little scratching post and that kind of stuff. And so truthfully, the cat boarding area is a really serene area. And so and again, if you had a cat, I would definitely recommend a facility that has a completely separate cat boarding facility.
So let's get back to mental health issues. So what sort of mental health problems do animals suffer from, and you know, how do you know if your animals has some issues that need to be evaluated?
So it's such an interesting question because it's very variable. I think dogs in general are more anxious animals. I think the smarter the dog, they can lean to be more anxious because they're easily bored. Some dogs are anxious from the moment I first see them, from at a puppy visit. They are anxious. Some dogs, as I was telling you earlier about your dog, the older they get, the more anxious they get. My own Minpin, he's 13 now, and at about 10, his anxiety quadrupled. And he used to be a dog that would just get upset about fireworks. Well, now it's thunderstorm anxiety, it's firework anxiety, it's, you know, leave them alone anxiety. If I leave the house to go for a walk in the morning and I'm gone for 45 minutes, if I don't either leave him in my bedroom with the door closed or put him in his kennel, he's going to tear up something. And it's just, he's getting so much more anxious with age.
So is that anxiety or is that boredom? Because I've had that issue as well. They tear up the sofa and things like that. And oftentimes it's when they've been left alone.
Right. And I think,
and I didn't know if they were bored or they were just really PO'd.
Well, I think a younger dog, absolutely, that's boredom. Absolutely. Now, for an older dog, and again, specifically mine, he is anxious. And the other thing is, you know, kind of going with the same theme of mental health, dogs truly can get cognitive dysfunction. So we don't call it Alzheimer's, but we definitely have a diagnosis of cognitive dysfunction in older dogs, and that definitely worsens their anxiety. And I think, like with my dog, it's a lot of his cognitive dysfunction too, because he's a geriatric patient. We're so good at our jobs these days, we can keep these dogs alive to be 15, 16 years old. And I compare them to my clients all the time. This, you have a little old man in the nursing home age, you know, that's how old this dog is. And those levels of anxiety get worse with the cognitive dysfunction too.
Okay, so anxiety, the whimpering, the crying, the barking, maybe the tearing things up.
Yeah.
Maybe a change in their eating habits, perhaps.
Yeah, pacing, panting, all of those things can be signs of anxiety. And like I said, some dogs, it starts very young, and we start medical interventions sometimes very young in dogs. And then oftentimes it's spot treatments for specific anxieties like thunderstorms and fireworks.
What about regressing in terms of house training?
Man. Again, it's something I'm personally going through. I've got a 14-year-old chocolate lab at my house, and this is a dog for 12 years, never had an accident a day in her life.
But is that anxiety, or is that just getting old?
I think for her, it's cognitive dysfunction, because she specifically goes to a very specific place in the house. She goes in the front, to the front door, and goes, and almost not a night goes by that we aren't cleaning up something. And it, you know, we've tried, when we do some meds, she's on gabapentin, which is a pain medication, but it works well for cognitive dysfunction. And there's some new dog foods out there that are cognitive dysfunction dog foods that I'm not seeing a lot of help, but the studies show that they can really help. But definitely having accidents in the house that are very different can be behavioral for sure. And cats, accidents in the house is the number one behavioral issue in with cats, 100%. That, you know, going outside the litter box is stress, anxiety, or pissed off because it's a cat.
So, all right. So what sort of behavior, presumably new behavior, that's occurring, you know, more than just once or twice, what are the signs that perhaps you should bring your pet in to be evaluated?
So I think the accidents in the house is definitely one, especially if it's not something that's their usual, because that could be medical, it could be a UTI, or it could be behavioral, it could be incontinence, things like that. So, you know, working up an accident in the house is definitely worth it. Things that you notice that are worsening, very specific times, you know, again, the firework anxieties, the thunderstorm anxieties, those are something we commonly see. And those dogs are miserable. They're so stressed. My dog will shake the whole bed when a thunderstorm comes rolling through, and the fireworks as well. And so those are dogs that are worthy of medical intervention. And, you know, there are things that it's not necessarily drugs. Thunder shirts work sometimes in dogs, and those are just vests that you can buy, you know, over the counter. It helps them feel protected. But a lot of times we're putting these guys on either spot treatment, behavioral drugs, or even long-term behavioral drugs. And a lot of them are really safe.
What kind of drugs are we talking about?
So for long-term, my go-to for long-term daily treatment is Prozac. It takes a while to work, and it's something that you kind of have to wean them off of. So those are the negative aspects of it. But again, these are the dogs that I'm that are younger typically. They are just anxious dogs, and they need medical intervention for their anxiety. Early on, and I've had some really good success using Prozac long term for long term anxiety. The other options, you know, we use a lot of the people drugs. Also, you know, Xanax. Xanax is a great spot treatment for you know, specific anxieties. Trazodone, as you figured out, is a good spot treatment for anxiety, and we use. Something less commonly is acepromazine, which is a sedative. That one it was used a lot years before for thunderstorm anxiety, but again, it is a true sedative, so it can lower some blood pressures and knock your dog out for a pretty long period of time, which sometimes you want.
You know. So I want to remind our listeners of the phone number. Again, that's 1-800-552-8502, and feel free to call in a question or comment or share your own experience perhaps with your pet's mental health issues. It's summertime.
Yes, sir.
And it is hot outside.
It is super hot.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about special concerns that we may have about keeping your pets safe and healthy during the summertime.
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
So a couple of things. I feel... like in the summertime, dogs should be indoors as much as possible. Specifically, brachycephalic breeds, which are the smushy face guys, your bulldogs and those kind of guys. It's just too hot for them to be outside. And definitely exercise is important. I want you to exercise your dogs, but go right before sunrise or right before sunset when, you know, you get a little bit of break from the sun. The humidity's still there. Obviously, plenty of water, plenty of shade. Even some dogs that need to be shaved, do it for the summertime. Absolutely. These guys are wearing fur coats, you know, and, you know, heat stroke is a real thing, and we see it, unfortunately, all too commonly in veterinary medicine. And these dogs have just been left outside too long, and they get overheated, and they will come in with all kinds of problems, not just overheated. These guys can get some serious disease, some kidney failures, and some coagulopathies because their bodies are just shutting down from the true heat stroke. And again, the brachycephalic breeds are the ones you've got to be really careful about. And also, these guys that are overweight, be mindful of that. It's harder on them too. The heat is harder on them. And so keeping your dog in an optimal body condition is really important all the time, but especially in the summer.
And dog houses don't provide the...
Yeah, and again, y'all, this is my opinion, but, you know, keeping these guys inside as much as possible is just so much easier on them. And I understand that sometimes that's not, you know, a doable option. So if these guys are going to be outside, a doghouse with some significant shade, fans, and again, an endless water source is so important.
I thought sometimes the doghouses can actually be worse.
Yeah, it depends. There's so many different ones out there now. And so some of the newer ones... I think are okay, but you're right. Sometimes you're just trapped in a hot box, you know, but at least it is a form of shade. And a lot of times the sun is part of the reason these guys truly overheat is that blazing sun on top of them. They don't have any way to get away from it if they're out in the yard. And again, if you're exercising them, don't overdo it. You know, if these guys are stopping on your walk, they're telling you, take me home.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we need to worry about sunscreen or things like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think in some dogs, yes. There are dogs that, you know, their melanin is lacking. And so these dogs are really white in color. You know, the non-haired areas, you can put doggy sunscreen on them to help, not necessarily with sunburn. These guys will get hemangiosarcomas associated from the sun, and some of those can be pretty malignant and spread elsewhere. They'll start out on the skin, but they can be pretty malignant. A lot of those are UV related, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. And what about taking your dog swimming?
I think dogs, you know, dogs love to swim for the most part. And again, your brachycephalics that are short and broad-chested, those guys don't swim very well. The only thing I would say about swimming is don't overdo it. Mm-hmm. You can overdry their coat. The saltwater or the chlorine pools can really dry out the coat if they're overdoing it. With some dogs, you just can't keep them out of the pool. They love it. And honestly, it's a great form of exercise that's easy on the joints. We do see some secondary ear infections and things like that. These guys that just stay in the pool because of the moisture, they almost get a swimmer's ear, where they'll get a yeast infection or a bacterial infection just from staying too wet. So that is a side effect we see. But I think in general, as long as they can swim and then they don't overdo it, it's a good form of exercise.
The cats don't seem to like it very much.
They
though.
Don't. The cats are their own kind of an animal.
Yeah. So we actually have a couple callers on hold. Let's start off with Clyde from Natchitoches. Or is that, I'm sorry, that's Natchitoches. Clyde, welcome to Health Matters.
We got a question about our kitty cat.
Okay, shoot.
What's your kitty cat's name?
Our kitty cat's name is Smart Owl.
Smart Owl.
Svart.
Svart.
Svartalf.
Is that a family name?
No, that's a sort of a Norse mythology name. It means dark elf.
Awesome. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead with your.
That's all right.
Your question.
We call him that because he's a black cat. Actually, he's kind of chocolate colored now. Really, he's kind of faded, and it looks like he's been dusted with cocoa powder. but he is, let's see, he is, I guess, about 13, and he has been one of, a little bit earlier this year, like in the last month, we lost his companion, the other cat that we had, and it seems like he has decided to, doesn't want to come in the house, wants to be out on the screened-in porch instead of being in the house and on the porch the way he usually is, and his appetite seems to be considerably reduced. Any suggestions?
How long ago did he lose his companion?
About 6 weeks, I guess.
Okay. I mean, and was he with that other cat all his life? Does he know life without that cat?
They have both. Bagheera was here, was about a year older, and was here when we got Smart Alf and his litter mate, who died several years ago.
You know, it's interesting. Some cats are loners, don't care if there's another animal around, they're happy as they can be. Some cats are very social, and you know, the potential of him truly just grieving the loss of a lifelong companion, that's a thing. You know, it is I think more common in dogs, because dogs I think tend to be more tender-hearted than cats and more social, but if he doesn't know life without that companion, it definitely could be part of his grieving process. Now, that being said, a decrease in appetite, again, it could be grieving. You've got, you know, as we talk about, these guys that are over 12 years old are geriatric patients, and so it could be a medical issue. Cats, you know, get kidney disease with age, and they can get some decreased appetite with that. You know, it may be worth a medical workup just to make sure that everything on the inside is okay, and then we can really kind of pinpoint that maybe it is just grieving. And sometimes it lasts a long time. You know, these guys can grieve for a long time. I would recommend a medical workup, just maybe a little blow work to make sure there's nothing else going on. And if all that looks okay, maybe he needs a new friend.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm 75. My wife's a little bit older. I don't think we need to take on another kitty.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I understand.
That's looking for somebody to have to find a home for one.
Yeah. No. How old do cats?
You know, cats with good medical care, man, I can get a cat to 18 years old sometimes. Now, that's not all the time, but you know, a lot of cats can live 15 to 18 years. I think average lifespan's probably 13 to 15, but sometimes we can get them longer than that. Now, these guys that go outdoors, their lifespans are a little bit shorter, just because they get exposed to stuff.
His
cat,
he said, was what, 13?
Yeah, 13. Yeah, and so
13.
You know,
he's always been an inside cat.
Yeah. Okay, good,
we
good.
Try to keep him that way.
He's
escaped a couple of times. You know, slip out a door when you weren't washing as close as you needed it, but he's never been out for long. Hmm.
So, Clyde, I guess if there's not going to be another companion, and you may need to be his companion a little bit more.
Well,
huh?
We try.
Yeah. So
we try. I mean, he's a pet cat, and we pet him, and he's a little snuggle bunny a lot of times.
Yeah.
Used to be a lot more. It probably didn't help that I was in the hospital and then rehab for about 2 weeks getting a shoulder replaced.
Yeah, his whole world's been turned upside down here lately. If he doesn't eat any canned food, I rarely recommend canned food, but these older guys that are kind of struggling with their appetite, you can offer some canned food and maybe help boost his appetite.
We've done that.
Okay.
I mean, that's been written back. We've been kind of recommended as well, and we've done that. He's had a bladder problem a few months ago, forming crystals in his urine, and having to watch anything's got fish is what Cheryl, our vet, told us.
Yeah, these kids, and especially, and it's a male cat, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's actually more common in neutered male cats to get what we call sterile cystitis, where they'll get crystals in their bladder, and it can be a mess for those guys. They can get blocked, and it can be pretty painful. And so, honestly, some of his behavior could be related to some pain from some crystals. Those guys can be uncomfortable.
We can check on that too.
Has he had any blood work done recently?
Not just recent.
Okay. Yeah, it may not be a bad idea to check on that just to make sure there's not some underlying medical cause just because of his age. Like, he's in his twilight years. I mean, like I said, we can get these guys a lot of years, but at that age, you're definitely in your twilight geriatric years. But that doesn't mean...
Well, we knew that.
Yeah.
Clyde, well, listen, good luck with... What was his name again?
Smart Owl.
Good luck, and I appreciate you calling in.
Well, I appreciate the information.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good night. Okay, we've got Daniel from Shreveport. Daniel, welcome to Health Matters.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Daniel.
Hey, so this is a story, actually. I'm going to keep it short, but it's dealing with also cats and pet anxiety. So my girlfriend's got a cat, and my girlfriend loves to travel. She spent 6 months in Europe about a year ago. She just got back from North Dakota, and then she'll take trips here and there. Her and her cat are really attached, and her cat does not like to be alone. So, also, her cat's really smart. Her name is Blair Waldorf. She's realized that anytime she's got a bag, any kind of bag with her, that means she's probably going to leave. So, the past year or so, my girlfriend can't leave bags out, whether it's a suitcase or a backpack or a duffel bag, because the cat likes to urinate.
It is their weapon of choice.
It is, yeah, and it's just like every time there's a bag left out, she's scared that she's going to leave, and she goes for it. So now she's got to put all her bags on the top shelf, and for the most part, problem solved.
Yeah, I am not surprised. Cats, they're, you know, for as kind of quiet and to themselves as they are, they're smart creatures, but they can also be, they can hold grudges for sure. You know, I had a cat when I was in vet school. We were gone all the time, and he was an old man, but he would pee in the dead center of my bed if I was gone too long. I mean, it was like he marked it out with a ruler, and he would, and it was absolutely behavioral. Now, again, as I was just talking to the previous caller, these guys can get a lot of bladder and urinary medical issues, but definitely what you describe, it sounds like it's vindictive, unfortunately.
Exactly. Well, I just wanted to, that came to my mind.
That's an awesome story. Sorry. Hey, I feel your pain. My cat pees inappropriately outside the box, so I feel your pain. It is a common thing, and at least it's only when she's going out of town and not all the time.
That's right. Cool. Well, thanks again for taking the call.
Good luck.
Thank you for calling in, Daniel.
All right. Bye.
All right. Well, we've got Bonnie calling in from Shreveport. Bonnie, welcome to Health Matters. What's your question?
Well, I have a little terrier that is just became a year old. I've had her since she was about 3 months old, and she's always been skittish, you know, around other people. But the last 3 or 4 months, she's gotten really kind of anxious, and she also seems fearful, you know, around the house. And I just wondered if there's resources here where I could get her evaluated.
Yeah, you know, I think something key that you just told me in that statement is terrier. The terrier breed, I think they're smart dogs. They're kind of a working dog. And we do see some anxiousness and some fearfulness in those breeds in general. And honestly, you know, something like a thunder shirt would be something easy to start with and see if that relieves some of that. Have you tried that?
Yes.
Okay.
I have.
No success?
Well, just very minimal.
Okay. The other thing, I haven't mentioned this yet tonight, there is a relatively new product that it's actually a probiotic, so it's super safe, and it's called Calming Care, and what it does through the probiotic, it can cause some calming and decrease in anxiety, and because it's a probiotic, it's super safe, and a lot of the behavioral meds are, but they're still oral medications, that would be something to think about trying. It comes in it's a powder that you put on their food, and most dogs like the way it tastes. That would be something that you could start with. It wouldn't be lifelong medications, but as young as this dog is, and it seems like the anxiety is worsening, and these guys can become fear biters and things like that, and it's not that they're mean, they're just anxious, and so maybe trying something as easy as a probiotic in the form of the Calming Care, but this dog may be a good candidate for something like Prozac as young, you know, as young as a pup as it is, and again, I hate to start thinking about lifelong meds, but man, we see some success with it, but something like the probiotic would be a good place to start.
It's called Calming Care.
Yeah. Do you have a regular vet that she sees?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Ask, maybe call and just ask your vet. It's a relatively new product. It's been out probably about a year now. It's something that we use, and it's not something I use every day. I use it in my own anxious dog, you know, because like I said, he's a hot mess. And
what about people? Could people? I know some people who could benefit.
Hey, it's a probiotic, so maybe it wouldn't hurt.
I know some people. I'll sprinkle it on their food.
But yeah, ask your vet about it and see if they carry it. If they don't, you may could get them to prescribe it where you could get it, you know, online or something like that, but that's something that we've started using, and I've had some pretty good success with just that. That's something to start with.
I'll check into it. It's just my concern is I just feel so sorry for her because, like, during the day, she finds a hiding place, and I think she stays there all day, you know, while I'm gone.
Yeah, and it stinks.
It's so
some of these
think that she's going to live like that.
Hey, tell me this. How much exercise is she getting?
Well, she gets a pretty good exercise. She likes to run around the backyard, you know, and she does get... I haven't taken her for walks because I don't know how she would handle that.
You know, maybe some increase in exercise if it doesn't stress her out. You never know how they're going to act to that. And the other thing, you know, true socialization classes would be maybe something for her. Now, sometimes, again, it doesn't work because they're just so anxious. But doing some socialization classes, you know, PetSmart, Petco, those places like that, they offer those. And there's small group classes that are just kind of group. So, and it's not training. training and, you know, things like that that are hardcore, but just some socialization classes may help. Also, I just heard today that the dog parks open back up, and so, you know, some dogs actually do well with some socialization. Now, that being said, sometimes it's a double-edged sword because these anxious dogs can be fear biters too, right? But maybe start with some, again, we don't want to go outside too much because of the heat, but maybe start with some short walks on a leash just around the neighborhood, and maybe that can relieve some of her anxiety, because again, these dogs are so smart and bored sometimes, and then it manifests as anxiousness, and I know exactly what you're describing. I've definitely seen that in lots of dogs, but I can tell you the terrier breeds unfortunately sometimes are more anxious type dogs. But hopefully we can find a sweet spot of exercise and maybe some socialization classes and even, again, potentially some meds if we need to.
Okay, I got one more quick question. Now, if she were on, you know, to be put on meds at some time, is it ever work out that, like, once you break that habit, you know, or that behavior, they get better?
Sure. I think that's always an option. And when you're dealing with behavioral things, I tell people this all the time. They don't read the recipe book, right? You have this book and it tells you that this is how it's going to work. And sometimes it's not that easy. And so, you know, if say you were to start something like Prozac, you could do, I always recommend do a whole month because it takes a little while to work because it's a chronic medication. Give it a month, see how it works. And then if you're happy with it and you want to stay on it, great. But then a year down the road, you want to say, hey, can we see how she is off of it? Absolutely. You can try. Now, again, specifically Prozac is something you have to wean. So you don't want to just stop that. But yeah, I've definitely had dogs that I've been able to get off meds once we broke the cycle. But I do have some dogs that, man, they just can't live without it.
Right, I understand that. Well, I really appreciate your help advice. Thank you so much.
No problem, guys. You're welcome. Good luck.
Bonnie, thanks for calling in.
Bye. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Some great questions this evening.
Yes. Behavioral, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny how the shows go in one direction or another. So,
well, and you're right. We haven't really talked. And we got it. You could talk about
important.
This for an hour.
Absolutely.
For sure.
And you know what? We might be, depending on the calls that we get. So we're happy to take more calls. The number again is 1-800-552-8502. And, you know, it can be about behavior issues or any aspect of pet health. I want to follow up with something you mentioned, Dr. Mackey, is that you mentioned probiotics. And for the benefit of the people who don't know what that is, you know, we have antibiotics and now probiotics. So can you just explain that a little bit?
Sure. And this is something that we haven't been using forever in dogs, but it is definitely something that I really think is an important part of veterinary medicine. And so the probiotics are the good guys, right? And so antibiotics, you know, we use those to kill off the bad bacteria, but the probiotics are the good bacteria that are the natural flora, and we use them in several different ways. Like I said, the common care is kind of a new way to use the probiotic, and the other way that we use probiotic is for these guys that get GI upset. You can use chronically probiotics to just keep the good flora in the GI tract, same as the way people use them. We don't use them in the form of yogurts in dogs like we do necessarily in people, but we have, again, it's a powder form. That's the one that I really like, and there's some other different formulations, but it really helps when you get diarrhea as a dog. All the good bacteria are gone, and that balance in the GI tract, the same as in people, is so important. And once that balance gets screwed up, the antibiotics can help. Man, the probiotics can help even more. And I lean towards reaching for probiotics with diarrhea way before I lean towards using antibiotics.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I've noticed that as people get older, they become increasingly fixated on the quality of their bowel movement. and nothing will ruin a senior's day.
Amen. I think, like, I'm getting that old, unfortunately.
Like some constipation. So if, you know, there can be some regularity in the morning, you know it's going to be a good day.
I bet
it's the same for these older dogs. Now, so it sounds as though what goes on in the GI tract of dogs can affect their mood and their behavior, I guess, is what you're saying. So let's segue then into food. Can diet influence their behavior or their moods?
I think... It's hard to answer, because diet can influence their GI tract, definitely, right? People food, of course, in dogs is always a no-go, and in my opinion, it's never something that's recommended, because you can really upset a dog's GI tract with people food, right? And of course, there are literally thousands of new dog foods on the market every year. You could tell me a dog food today that I've never heard of in my life, because that's how fast they are coming on the market. And it is a bit of a boutique-y thing that's trending right now, these boutique dog foods that I've never heard of, that people go to the pet store and it's this fancy bag with supposedly fancy dog food. And you know, for me, dog food is a bit of a hot topic. Recently, there's been a really big deal about the grain-free diets. I don't know if you've heard anything about that. There's a big trend in the last couple of years of people putting dogs on grain-free diets.
Just like gluten-free for dogs?
Exactly. And you know, the gluten-free, organic, grain-free diets. And it was very trendy. It started in about 2017. And we as veterinarians always knew that grain allergies are really, really rare in dogs. And so grain-free diets are something that, yes, there is a subset of dogs that can help, but it's a really small subset. And so when people started jumping on this train of grain-free diets, we realized, unfortunately, all too late, that the grain-free diets can actually do some harm. There was an FDA study that came out actually just about a month ago, and this to me was really important. I think the numbers in 2017, they had three cases of dilated cardiomyopathies in dogs reported to the FDA. Three. In 2018, there were well over 300 cases reported to the FDA. And in 2019, we're at about 200 so far from this study that came out. Yeah. We know it is linked. The dilated cardiomyopathy is linked to the grain-free diets 100%. It's a taurine deficiency related to the grain-free diets. And we used to see dilated cardiomyopathies in dogs pretty frequently, and we got it figured out with the right dog foods. It's taurine. They need that amino acid for their heart. It is good for their, it is important for their heart.
Can you give them
heart
a Red Bull? Because there's a lot of taurine in Red Bull.
I wouldn't recommend that. But so that's a little bit of my soapbox moment for the evening. Please, guys, don't feed the grain-free diets. It really can do more damage than good. And you got to look. There's so many of them out there now. Like I said, it's gotten so trendy. But there were a handful of very specific dog foods that were named in this study that I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus today. But y'all be careful out there. Read the small print on your dog foods. And I would stay away from the boutique-y diets, because those guys just haven't done the research that they need to. Now, behavioral-wise, like I said, you asked Dr. Katz about behavior. I don't know that food necessarily affects their behavior, other than if you don't feed them, they're mad and then they tear up things. But you know, my big issue is the grain-free diet trend that is just an overwhelming issue right now.
Okay, well, we've got more callers. Actually, they're lining up.
Good.
So we're going to have to get to them. Let's see who we've got here. Jim from Texas.
Yeah, I am from Texas. Thank you very much.
And you are Jim?
Yeah, I am Jim, and I'm passing through.
Perfect.
I seem to have adopted some cats that came along with the girlfriend. most of the time, and you know, they're pretty friendly to me. Sometimes they decide I'm the monster. One of them, though, was adopted late by her, that just does not come out. Just plays with the other cats, but will not come forward, does not come out. Relatively happy. And I can't help but think that the cat had been abused before showing up at her place. If I take the time to tie this cat down, because I can walk up to her if I catch her just right and pet her, and she just absolutely loves it. She just goes rolling over, crazy, slobbering, the whole thing, you know. But getting her to come forward or in a situation where she's comfortable with other people around, can this be broken if I were to just like tie her down and pet her for about 5 or 6 hours? And at what point will she swipe at me?
You know, I think it's going to be kind of variable per cat. You know what I would suggest, because you said your girlfriend's got several cats, right?
Yeah, she's got two. One's going to be leaving. That's why I got to get this one. Don't have to, but I want this one to start being a little bit more affectionate.
Well, I tell you, that cat might be more affectionate as a single cat household. Some cats are real loners, just the opposite of the previous caller where that cat's mourning the loss of his housemate. Some cats are real loners, and so I wonder how this cat would be as a single child, you know. And the other suggestion would be maybe put that cat in its own room that's away from the other cat, and then that way it may feel more comfortable in its own kind of secluded area. I worry there may be a little danger in holding that cat down, because if it loses its happy and swipes at you, they can really, they mean it sometimes. But it sounds like when you are able to get some affection in, she really enjoys it. And so I think in small doses, I think that's a great idea. But like I said, I think maybe trying to get that cat some alone time, and even alone time with you. So in a room, door closed, lights out, you know, and, right. And honestly, it would, in my opinion, I think it would be best if the cat came to you. But it sounds like once you do get to her, that she enjoys the love. But maybe, you know, in a room by herself, and just kind of go slow, get on the floor, you know, with the cat, and you know, I would go slow. But I would do small increments maybe frequently versus, you know, a one long period where maybe you think you can kind of break her of the habit. And some dog, or some cats are just, like I said, they're loners. And my own cat, it is his world, and I just pay the bills and clean up after him, you know. And he wants to be pet, he comes to me, but I cannot make him, you know, force affection, and a lot of cats are like that.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you're right. This may not be a character flaw. Just the cat.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But it's very interesting. If you could get some alone time with that cat away from the other cat, that may be a tipping point to maybe being able to be more affectionate.
Okay, well, Jim, best of luck with
your
cat and your girlfriend.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so let's see. We've got, we have a ton of people on the line. Let's see, we got Renee from Texas.
Yeah, good evening, veterinarians. I appreciate your professionalism.
Oh,
thank you.
I'm not a veterinarian. I'm a cancer doctor. We've got one veterinarian here.
Thank you. I love y'all. Okay. Two questions. I need to know what to give a dog for pain. And second of all, what to take care of fleas. And I'm going to be real brief on this. I moved out here in Tyler County, next door neighbors, stole this dog, ran over it. It's got a broken shoulder, broken leg. They shot the other dog head on with a shotgun and while it was tethered. And I've been caring for this other dog. He is young. He's a chocolate lab. He's been neutered. I don't know if there's a microchip in him or not. My concern is I've been taking care of him. He's loving. He's sweet. He's everything. And I can say this with all my heart. The only thing is I'm homebound. I was hit 75 miles an hour. And let me say this. I just need to see what I can do for this animal that I've been taking care of for the last 3 months.
Okay. So
it just chills me.
What?
I mean, I've called some veterinarians. And I'm just going to be brief. I just need to see what I can do since I am. And, you know, worst medical care in the nation. Don't ever get in an accident under Texas property code Title 55 because
okay.
You're going to be in trouble.
Well,
but I need to know what to do for this dog because broken shoulder, broken leg, and I can't take him into a veterinary. I know that sounds crazy, but they don't even know where my car is. So
okay.
Let me add some humor here to you all that in the medical professional.
Yeah.
Well,
what do you think?
This is tough because with injuries that extensive, I'm going to tell you that over-the-counter pain control is not going to be appropriate for this dog. This dog needs prescription strength pain and anti-inflammatories. And something to really remember, guys, this is super important. Anti-inflammatories that people take are not safe for dogs. As much as we talk about these behavioral meds that are people meds, so over-the-counter NSAIDs like Tylenol, Advil, Aleve, those are not appropriate for dogs. Those are metabolized very differently. And so please don't lean towards any you know, any people NSAIDs. And look, it's tough. I know you're in a tough situation personally, but this dog needs prescription strength pain medication. You know, and it's hard for me to say that there's anything that can control this dog's pain that's kind of over the counter without veterinary care. And the same goes for fleas, unfortunately. I know you mentioned that as well. There are some over the counter flea controls that are absolutely, in my opinion, not good and don't work, especially in this area. Our fleas are mutants out here, and I as a veterinarian have great prescription strength meds, but those again are prescription strength, so I feel like I'm not giving you any good answers, unfortunately. And maybe you could have a good Samaritan or a neighbor that can get that guy to a clinic to be seen and then get you some good prescription pain control.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like, obviously, you know, Renee has some challenges in terms of mobility or getting the animal to a vet, but perhaps you know, a neighbor could do that.
Yeah,
it sounds
I think
like
that
that's
would
what
be
the animal
a really,
really
good
needs.
Idea. Yeah.
Renee, good luck, and it's wonderful that that dog has you taking care of him. Okay, we've got John from Bossier.
Yes.
John, thanks for your patience. What's your question for Dr. Mackey?
Well, Dr. Mackey really needed me to call in tonight. I mean, that was the order that I got from Janice.
This is a client.
It's just a plant.
I was telling Renee, the producer, I was in a room today with a really great client, and this is John Bailey. His dad wasn't there today, but Mom was there, and I was telling her that I was going on tonight, and she spouted out the phone number to Red River Radio off the top of her head, and I told her jokingly to have Mr. John call in. Hey, you couldn't get out the house and come see me today?
Well,
I think you're coming tomorrow, huh? Yeah, he's coming tomorrow.
What you could talk about a little bit is that Sonny, you know, our new dog that we've adopted, is having a little bit of trouble with, becoming integrated into the family, because our little Bichon, Addie, never was a loud dog, never was one of those yippy-yappy little dogs, but he's become one. And Sonny's really hyper, and I always figure that dogs get over being hyper after about 2 years. Is that true? Or?
I think, my old man who has all the anxiety is still hyper as all heck. And you know what we should try? I'm seeing Sonny tomorrow, right?
I think so.
Yeah. That calming care that I was talking about, that would maybe be something to help. Maybe just take the edge off and joining in the family. Because remind me, how long have you had Sonny?
A little over a year.
Yeah. And so, and the other thing is the Thunder Shirt. If you haven't tried that, we can do that too. And poor Addie's just driving him crazy, huh?
Well, he's kind of driving Addie. Addie's an adult, and Amy, our other dog, is an adult, and he's like a, an adolescent.
Yeah.
With all this energy, and they don't.
Well, and that could, it is going to get better with some time, but, I think that calming care would be great, great idea to try, and that stuff's super safe and inexpensive, so we can talk about that tomorrow for sure. Yeah. Thank you for calling.
I'm talking about this over the phone tonight.
Hey, you're awesome. I'm so glad you called.
Okay, I'll let somebody else talk.
Thank y'all. I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, bye.
Okay, thanks for the call. So we actually had someone call in a question, and it's, it's a cat question, actually. This was Hunter from Nacogdoches, and Hunter has a three-year-old cat, and about 2 to 3 times a day, the cat growls and chases its tail. He wants to know if that can be a medical reason or a mental health situation going on.
So I would say there's a potential for a medical cause. Dogs and cats have these gross things called anal glands that live inside their rear end. And sometimes in cats specifically, they can get really clogged up and cause some pain back there. It would be worthy of maybe going and having the anal glands expressed, not at a groomer, but at a veterinary facility, because we really are more trained. I know I went to school forever to be able to squeeze rear ends for a living, but there is a potential that there's a medical cause for that. And also, some cats can have some pain, just hip pain or orthopedic pain, arthritis if it's an older cat, that may be causing those symptoms. There are also some cats can be really hypersensitive to touch, or absolutely could be behavioral, because again, as I said kind of over and over again tonight, cats can definitely be animals that just have their own personalities and are a bit quirky, so it could be that's his quirky behavioral issues, but it's definitely worth making sure that anal glands are okay, or even maybe trying a joint supplement or something like that in case there is some pain associated with that behavior.
All right. Well, that's these anal glands, huh? It's not just the cats, man. It's the dogs.
The dogs,
huh?
Too. Dogs. Way more often am I squeezing dogs' rear ends, but,
So when the dog starts scooting around on the floor and
that
outside,
is a red flag.
You know it's time.
That's
time. So getting back to behavior, what about spay and neutering? How does that affect an
animal's
behavior?
Man, that's a great question. Spay and neuters absolutely change your dog's behavior, but there's so many people that feel like it's in a bad way, and in my opinion, that's not the case. Specifically, a neuter is going to change the behavioral needs of an intact male dog. An intact male dog is chasing a girlfriend until he doesn't have those parts anymore. They can also have some behavioral issues that tend to lean more towards aggressive just because of hormonally based behavior. With females, same thing. These guys can have a lot of behavioral issues just related to being intact. They're definitely more hyper when they're intact. And females, you know, heat cycles can be really hard on little female dogs. These guys, after a heat cycle, can get false pregnancies. They'll make milk. They're convinced themselves they're pregnant. And things like that are really behaviorally hard on dogs. So spaying and neutering these guys absolutely is a good thing. And like I said, yes, it'll change your dog's behavior, but in a good way. It'll calm them down. And, you know, some dogs will gain weight after spays and neuters, but it's just a decrease in the metabolism because we're getting rid of those hormones. And so you decrease the amount that they eat, and then they will not gain weight. It is based on how much they're eating. And so the metabolism changes and the behavior definitely changes after a spay and neuter. So it's super important. I think the behavior changes are all good behavioral changes.
We have about a minute left for questions. So we've got Jewel on the line, and Jewel's been waiting. So let's see if we can get one quick question in, okay? Jewel, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, thanks for your patience. We've got about a minute. If you can get a question out, we'll try to get it answered.
Quick.
Okay.
Let me run down the history. Cat, 10 years old, has always, he and his sibling have always weighed 18 pounds, normal for him. None of the other cats in the house weigh that. They all eat the same free choice food. He is cachexic for probably the last 6 months. He's now down 4 pounds. He's eating great. He is not hyperthyroid. Not hyperthyroid. Ruled out. I started him on Fortiflora probiotic. The vet I've seen, I just can't seem to get anywhere in the answers. He's eating fine. I don't really think he's polyuric, but he might be a little tad polydipsic.
Jewel,
did I get it in?
Did you? Yep. So the thyroid was ruled out via blood tests at a clinic, right?
Yes.
Okay. Was there other blood work that was done? That would be a place to start. The kidney disease, diabetes in these overweight cats. So I think if he hasn't had a full blood panel, that is where you need to start, especially with him being kind of a big cat.
Okay. Jewel, I'm sorry. We're going to have to cut it short, but it sounds as though there's still more to do in terms of a medical workup. So hopefully you'll get the answer. So thanks.
Guys, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for calling in. So we've had a lot of good callers and you've done a great job answering
their
questions. So I want to thank Jewel and Clyde from Nacogdoches, Daniel from Shreveport, Bonnie from Shreveport. We had Jim from Texas, Renee from Texas, John from Bossier, Hunter from Nacogdoches. We've had a bunch. And so we'll have to do this again. I do want to apologize. I would make a terrible DJ because I apparently played, the Cure Love Cats and said it was Stray Cat Strut or something like that. So I'm going to stick to just hosting and not DJing music. Thank you very much, Dr. Mackey, for coming in.
Welcome, guys.
Always
a
great show. And
lots of callers. Thank you.
Absolutely. Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional or a veterinarian. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Views expressed on Health Matters may not necessarily express those of Red River Radio, LSUS, or staff. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, and phone assistance has been provided this evening by Wally Derliff, Sheila Lawrence, and Tim Snell. Production of Health Matters is made possible in part by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Please join us next Thursday for Health Matters when we will talk about plastic surgery and facial reconstruction. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz. Thank you for joining us this evening. Sitting on a fence.